About 4 years ago, we looked at this first chapter, just two verses of the first chapter for Father's Day, when we talked about Job's regular custom. But I want to look at the entire prologue today and get into the story of Job. Let me begin by sharing two short prayers that are familiar and carry powerful messages. One prayer is called an Irish blessing, and it goes, "May the road rise up to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face. The rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand." An Irish blessing prayer. And then the Serenity Prayer, written by the American theologian Reinhold Niebuhr. It is commonly quoted as, "God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference." But Niebuhr's prayer originally asked for courage first, and specifically for changing things that must be changed, not things that simply can be changed. And so a better rendering is, "Father, give us courage to change what must be altered, serenity to accept what cannot be helped, and the insight to know one from the other." So you got two prayers, the Irish blessing, and the Irish blessing is nice. It hopes for the best and for the universe to be kind to us. It calls for God's grace and God's covering. We all need good wishes. We need blessings from the universe and from God. And we all need God to hold us in the palm of his hand. But the Serenity Prayer, on the other hand, provides some perspective for dealing with life situations. It is helpful to pray this prayer for the times when the road doesn't rise up to meet you, and when the wind isn't always at your back, and when the sun isn't shining warmly upon your face. The Serenity Prayer provides perspective for the shifting forces and the shifting situations in life. Today we look at a man who experienced the gifts and the blessings of the Irish prayer. He had everything going for him. The sun shining brightly, the wind at his back, the road rising to meet him. But then he also had to make a decision amidst the shifting forces of life, because things changed for Job. And I read the entire first chapter because it provides the backdrop for Job's story. We know that a divine council takes place. God has a cabinet meeting of sorts with angelic aids. It's interesting to ponder the notion that Satan, or the Satan in the Hebrew, the accuser, would be a part of the angelic council, a regular part of the divine council, and be a part of this deliberation. But the accuser, this angelic accuser, shows up with the other angels who are part of the heavenly council. He has been searching the earth for unfaithful people, and during the deliberations, God points out Job. And God highlights Job's character. He says Job is a man of integrity, which means that he is blameless. He is upright. He is a man of sincere faith, that he has, you know, he's very pious. He's very committed and devoted to his faith. And Job is a man who turns away from evil. So at the divine council meeting, God says all this about Job, but the angelic accuser, the accuser, the Satan — Satan is not a proper name, or it's like a title — the accuser, the Satan, questions Job's behavior. He questions Job's motivation behind his behavior, and he says, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not put a hedge around him and his household and everything he has? You have blessed the work of his hands. so that his flocks and herds are spread throughout the land. But now stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to his face. Now that word curse doesn't really mean curse in the Hebrew. It really is used euphemistically to say, and will he bless you? Because they don't want to use curse in the same sentence with the language about God. It really means, will he bless you, euphemistically? Will he bless you to his face? So the accuser suggests that Job's faith is rooted in the fact that God has blessed him. And you know what I mean. That Irish blessing stuff. The road rising to meet him. The wind at his back, the sun shining softly, warmly upon his face. And as a result of this conversation with the accuser, life shifts for Job. Let me say something about this story and about Job's life. One thing that you notice is that Job has everything. That there isn't anything that he wants, that he needs, that he doesn't have access to. He has everything. The text says he had 7 sons and 3 daughters, and he owned 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 donkeys, and had a large number of servants. He was the greatest man among all the people of the East. And you notice that the writer references the number 10. 7 sons, 3 daughters, that equals 10. 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, that goes to 1,000, that's another 10. 500 yoke of oxen, 500 donkeys, going to 1,000, another 10. 10 is a number that symbolizes completion and perfection. So the Bible is saying that not only is Job's faith complete, He's a man that is blameless, a man that shuns evil, a man that fears God. But Job's family is complete. Job's wealth and his reputation are complete. Job has everything. And the fact that he has so many animals suggests that he owns a lot of land and has a lot of servants. Job just is, he's just a big baller. He's just got everything going for him. He's one of the most powerful persons in the East. Now there is a connection between Job's blameless and faithful life and Job's abundant blessings. The accuser has suggested that Job's faith is untested, that Job's blessings and resources have provided a large hedge around him. He said, the reason he is so faithful is you have blessed him and you have put this hedge of protection around him. And we know how it is. It's easier to have faith when the wind is at your back. It's easier to have faith when you have more money than you need or can use. It's easier to say what you would do when tragedy hasn't entered your life. Job was a blessed man. He had everything. In fact, sometimes when you've got so much stuff, you don't really pray anymore. You don't need to show up on to worship. You don't need to get on your knees and pray. All you need is to get some of your resources because you think you can get everything that you want. The accuser suggests that Job's faith is tied only to his blessings. Now you heard about that couple that thought nothing about wearing masks. They didn't wear them. Their friends didn't wear them. And they didn't really believe the info about the virus. But then the virus tested them. They had not been personally impacted by the virus. And so when you've not been impacted, sometimes you get a little cocky. But then they caught the virus. And the virus caught them. And they wound up in the hospital. And now they're preaching the importance of wearing masks. Sometimes when the wind is at your back and the road rises up to meet you, you've got one attitude. But when trouble comes in, your attitude shifts. So Job has everything. He is a man of faith whom God blesses. You can have everything, beloved. And faith untested can be a breeze. But then Job loses everything. Listen to the text. The Lord said to Satan, very well then, everything he has is in your power. But on the man himself do not lay a finger. Then Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. One day when Job's sons and daughters were feasting and drinking wine at the oldest brother's house, a messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen were plowing and the donkeys were grazing nearby, and the Sabaeans attacked and made off with them. They put the servants to the sword, and I am the only one who has escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another messenger came and said, "The fire of God fell from the heavens and burned up the sheep and the servants, and I am the only one who has escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another messenger came and said, "The Chaldeans formed three raiding parties and swept down on your camels and made off with them. They put the servants to the sword, and I am the only one who has escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, yet another messenger came and said, "Your sons and daughters were feasting and drinking wine at the oldest brother's house when suddenly a mighty wind swept in from the desert and struck the four corners of the house. It collapsed on them and they are dead. And I am the only one who has escaped to tell you." God allows this accuser to test Job's resolve. And Job's life gets piled on. Job has done nothing wrong, but life shifts for him. There's a lesson there, beloved. Sometimes it's not your fault. It's just that life has taken a turn. Job is not privy to the conversation between God and the accuser, but the tragedies of life pile in upon Job all in one day. Look at what happened. His oxen and asses are taken away. His sheep are burned up. His camels are taken, and all 10 of his children are killed. There are weather disasters, lightning, windstorm, and fire, and there are human predators, the Sabaeans and the Chaldeans. All this happens in one day. In fact, the text keeps saying, while he was still speaking, another came. So that Job doesn't have time to digest the message from one messenger before another messenger shows up with another tragedy. Everything comes at him so quickly, Job doesn't have time to catch his breath. He's getting it from all sides. That's faith under pressure. It piles on and tests the resolve of Job's faith. Job has everything when he wakes up in the morning and loses it all before the sun sets. He loses his animals. He loses his wealth. He loses his children all in the same day. That's how the pressure of life builds up, beloved. It's like a barrage. You're hit with a barrage of problems. It's one thing after another. It's one storm after another. You go to work, there's pressure and problems at work. Then you get home, and there's pressure and trouble happening at home. And you think that you've gone home to escape what you were going through at work. And that going home, you could take your hat off, take your shoes off, exhale, feel better, and get renewed for another day at work. And then you run into an argument at home. All right. And another storm. And you get the pressure coming from all sides. And what happens sometimes is the folk you depend upon to support you, to understand, the folk to whom you would call, they got an attitude with you. And they're not talking to you. So you got nobody to talk to, nowhere to turn. It's pressure piled in upon pressure. It's a barrage. And that can happen in a day. And it can happen in an hour. Somebody said, I'm about to lose my mind. Up in here. And even in the church, beloved, you can be serving the church and serving God and get a barrage of pressure from out of nowhere. Folks who are text happy and email happy love to send a text. They don't send encouraging texts. "Oh, you're doing a good job and we're praying for you." They're nitpicking and knick-knacking texts. Here's a text today. Just like old MacDonald had a farm. Old MacDonald had a text. Here a text. There a text. Everywhere a text. It's a barrage of stuff that piles in on you And then when harm comes to your children, that's the last message that Job gets. That's almost unbearable. And Job heard about his children. After all of this, he got up, tore his robes, and fell to the ground. You can lose it all in one day. And then you remember that story, Aurora, Colorado, Brittany Gilliam taking her nieces on an outing to a hair salon. And they were mistakenly stopped by the Aurora, Colorado police on the suspicion of being in a stolen vehicle. And her nieces, ranging in age from 6 to 17, were forced to lay face down on the ground at gunpoint by the police officers. Two of them, 12 and 17, were handcuffed by the police officers. And Brittany, her, is the adult there. She is there tormented by the screams and the cries of her nieces. And these nieces, screaming out in fear, continue to torment her today. She didn't know how it was going to turn out. You know, when the police come and stop you sometimes and they make you get out of the car at gunpoint, force you to get on the ground at gunpoint, you don't know how it's going to turn out. Life can bring disaster all in one day. So this man, Job, had everything, and he lost everything. He lost it all in one day, faith under pressure. But Job holds on to faith. The text says, at this, Job got up, tore his robe, and shaved his head. Then he fell to the ground in worship and said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised. In all this, Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing. So at first he displays the signs of grief and mourning. He tears his clothes. He shaves his head. He displays those signs of grief because he acknowledges what has happened. He knows he's lost everything. He's lost his children. He's lost his wealth, his possession. So he grieves and he mourns. He accepts what he cannot change. Faith doesn't mean that you deny reality. Faith doesn't mean that you call your tragedy something that it isn't. If it's a tragedy, it's a tragedy. Call it what it is. He has this moment of grief, this moment of mourning. But what I like about it is Job moves from his torn clothes, a sign of grief, to falling prostrate, a sign of worship. And his mourning turns to worship, and he says, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised. Job says, in effect, I came here with nothing, and I'll leave with nothing. And whatever I've got, God gave it to me. And if God gave it to me, God has a right to take it if God chooses. The ancients believed that possessions were a loan from God. Our old saints in the church, they used to have the same philosophy. They, at the death of a loved one, they would pray and say, Lord, you just loaned him to us for a little while. That's how they understood the members of their family. They thought they were loans from God. And so when God took them, they gave them right back to God. When Job worships and holds on his faith, he demonstrates that his faith is rooted in the sovereignty of God. God has a right to give. God has a right to take away. God is worthy of our praise. We need a faith to hold on to. We've got to find a way to hold on to faith. We must have a perspective about the building blocks of our lives. What are the building blocks of your life? Is your life built upon money? Is your life built upon your career or your reputation? Is your life built upon your connections? What is it that holds you together? I've got news for you. Money will run out. Your career might fall apart. Your reputation can be destroyed by some narcissistic nincompoop who's bent on trying to pull you down. Your connections might get mad at you and turn their backs on you. What holds your life together? What are the building blocks that hold you together? And Job demonstrates that his life is not built upon his money. His life was not built upon his possessions. His life was built upon his relationship with God. So when he loses everything, he can still bless God. Oh, beloved, the accuser not only shows up to tell God you've got the wrong motivation, the accuser shows back up after the trouble comes in to watch your face and see how you're going to respond to watch you fall apart, to watch you be destroyed. Don't let the accuser get the victory over your life and your situation. Ah, Chicago Commander Dion Boyd, a 30-year veteran of the Chicago Police Department, was promoted to Deputy Chief Police of Chicago, 57 years of age. I met him because our church I served there was in District 2, and at that time he was the district commander for District 2, and I was a part of a community policing program with pastors and the police, and we met monthly, community policing issues in our area. Good guy, committed to his work, committed to the community. Good guy, church-going man, 57 years old, just promoted to deputy chief police. And he committed suicide. He took his life almost a month ago. Respected staff member. So police spokesperson said to the officers, always remember to take care of yourselves and each other. And he says, there's no shame in reaching out for help. Please stay humble, stay human, stay safe, and stay well. This guy had just been promoted. He had a distinguished career, but he took his own life. There was something that crumbled for him. There was something that made him feel like he was backed into a corner. Hurting folk need to be heard in order to be healed. If you're hurting today, reach out to somebody. There's always somebody you can talk to. You'd better start sharing your hurts and your difficulties and your tragedies. And beloved, those of us who are the sounding boards for others, we had better start listening. So when someone comes and says, storms are going on in my life, I'm under pressure, we need to listen and make sure that people feel heard. Addie Wyatt, I've told you before about this woman. She came to me as I was preparing this sermon. She was carjacked. She was tied up with duct tape, thrown into her trunk, and then driven to a remote area. When the car stopped, she was taken out and dumped in a ditch. And as she lay there in this ditch, unable to free herself, she feared that she would die. And then it started to rain. And she started to scream and cry. She said to herself, on top of all this, carjacked, tied up, thrown into a ditch, and now it's going to rain. And I'm going to drown in this ditch. As the rain fell, the duct tape loosened. And the more it loosened, the more she was able to wiggle free and get herself to safety. She was able to bless God for the carjacking, for the duct tape, and also for the rain. Because even amidst all that happened to her, under all the pressure, God was still sovereign. And God was still in control. God is still in charge. We're all under pressure right now. The coronavirus situation is like a pressure cooker. Life is piling up on all of us. It's piling up on parents, especially with young children. It's piling up on marriages. Being together in the house all the time is putting a strain on marriages. It's piling up on systems, the healthcare system, the governance system, the systems with the church. It's piling up. We're all under pressure. Now, I want you to know you're not alone. The accuser is standing on the sidelines, testing our resolve. The accuser is telling us that we're not what we think we are. The accuser is telling us that we can't handle the pressure. But I hear God saying, in all things, God works together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. So God works in the good stuff, and God works in the bad stuff. God works in the difficult stuff. I hear God saying, nay, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. I hear God saying, if God be for us, he's more than the world against us. I hear God saying, we've been may endure for a night, but all joy will come in the morning. So trust God. Trust him. Talk about your struggles. Do like Job. And if you have to, get down on your knees and pray to God. And God will see you through every difficulty. Niebuhr continues with his serenity prayer, a part that many have never heard. And he says, living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace, taking as Jesus did this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that you will make all things right if I surrender to your will so that I may reasonably be happy in this life and supremely happy with you forever in the next. Amen. We extend the invitation to you. So we sing, till we meet again. And this is an invitation for you to be a part of our family. You can call us, the church. You can email us or text us. You can send a message to the church or stop by and visit with one of the ministers. You can give yourself to Jesus. We want to hear your story, and we want to encourage you, and we want you to know that you can trust in the Lord. If you trust in the Lord, he will see you through.
Treat everybody right. the battlefield.
I'm going to stay on the battlefield. I'm going to stay on the battlefield. I'm going to stay on the battlefield until stay on bending knees until I die. I'm going to stay on bending knees. I'm going to stay on bending knees. I'm going to stay on
sometimes you've got to stay on the battlefield. You've got to stay on bended knees till you die, till God brings you through. Be encouraged, beloved. Share that message with someone else to encourage them. Be a listener. Hear the hurt others share with you. I want to remind you again that on August 26th at 7 o'clock, we will have our semi-annual church meeting on Zoom. If you want to participate, you need to email the church office at ebcoffice@sbcglobal.net with your email address so that we can send the materials and information about the meeting to you. We will be giving notices for the next week leading up to the church meeting. And I want to thank you so much, beloved, for sharing your gifts and resources with us for Men's Day. The men were just a few hundred short dollars shy of the team total for last year. Just a few hundred. They almost hit the same total they hit last year with the team report. We didn't have the musicale this year like we did last year, but with the team report, they are neck and neck, and we were not meeting in person. That is wonderful. That is tremendous. So I'm proud of your members, proud of our leaders, Deacons Roberson and Williams, for their service. And, of course, I know you enjoyed the broadcast. We want to thank again Reverend Spears and Deacon Street and that whole media team and our music people for making it a wonderful presentation. God bless you and have a good week till we meet again.